Night of Friday night, Black Friday, Friday night. The gang's all back in town. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Jess Rains behind the glass. And you on the Team Hochberg phone line, 312-981-7200. What'd you get for Black Friday? We'll start it off next on 720 WGN. 709 on 720 WGN. Good evening, everybody. Welcome into the show. Matt Bubala here for John Landecker tonight until 10 o'clock. Thanks for staying up with us. 312-981-7200. Did you find a good deal today? Roger, I was reading, they're thinking over $9 billion in online shopping today.
I did my part.
Oh, really? Did you really?
Yeah.
On purpose? Or you just happened to be shopping?
I needed to do the shopping. Because the place that I wanted to get the stuff from was having a, you know, they had been promoting a Black Friday sale.
Of course.
And so I think I got some good deals. It was for the grand girls.
And you had to do it today, or you felt that, oh, I'll get the best deal today?
Well, because of the ad. And I knew I was going to buy from there anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the, you know, they sent me an ad in my email. And I saw it, and I go, oh, well, I might as well do it today. Get it out of the way. Plus, I was worried about getting the stuff in time. That's another thing.
Right.
You know, if you're ordering online, more people are ordering online, so it's going to overload the delivery services again. Right. So
yeah, they've been warning about that quite a bit, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
So they're thinking that online sales just today could be $9 billion.
Yeah.
Article in the Tribune says, despite less foot traffic, sales are expected to increase between 3.6 and 5.2% this year, totaling at least $755.3 billion. So a lot more is coming. So they're still thinking spending will be up this year, despite the uncertainty, despite everything going on in the world.
Yeah, and I'm still a little puzzled by that because of the higher unemployment. I mean, more people out of work. I'm wondering where those extra dollars are coming from.
Well, I think from the people that are still working who didn't get to go on vacation, who didn't do a lot of other things this year.
Possible, yeah.
You know?
All right. Interesting. Well, I did my part. Have you done your part yet?
I didn't do any today. Okay. I did get a million emails about Black Friday this, Black Friday that,
yeah.
And I just didn't have the mental capacity today to say, okay, let's take a look. Let's see what's out there. I did start making a list in the last couple of weeks of like everybody and start trying to get ideas, but I've never been one to be really good about saying, okay, Black Friday. And do you really feel today is the day anymore? Because especially this year, it's so spread out and they're, you know, advertising like Black November, like every day is going to be a great deal. And then there's Cyber Monday. And it seems that, you know, Black Friday used to be the in-person day.
Right.
This was the day that you get up at 2 a.m. last night and you go and you run out. And then the sales moved to 10 o'clock at night. So you didn't have to stay up all night. And then you'd go do that and, you know, everything else.
Yeah.
And now it really shifted mostly to online this year. Interviewed some people in the Tribune who said they were out at Macy's at 5 a.m. this morning when they opened, 5 cars in the parking lot at one place.
Yeah, the whole year so far with the virus has just been topsy-turvy. I don't know, it's a goofy term, but it has. I don't know of anyone who was making plans to, you know, go out. A lot of people I follow on Facebook and other social media, and nobody was putting up pictures of, hey, here we are, first in line, there's nobody behind us. You know, none of that this year. Last year, tons of it. So I think people are being a little more careful, a lot more careful this year, and maybe a little more frugal.
Well, I bet it's a combination. There's maybe more frugal, but maybe the deals have been so good, it's just easier. Maybe it's they're being careful. Maybe it's just, well, I don't need to do this because these deals are so good online.
Yeah, and here's the other thing I was just thinking about. Since we're really not traveling, even though if you saw some of the earlier pictures at O'Hare and Midway, a lot of people are traveling. But since I don't think as many people will be traveling at Christmas necessarily, that there's going to be more delivery of presents and gifts to all the people you would have normally gone to and had Christmas Eve with or Christmas morning, and you would have brought your own packages.
Right.
You would have brought everything with you. So I don't think there's going to be as much of that. I think the delivery is, you know, order early and order often, I think.
Well, I think that's really interesting. I wonder if a lot of people are not only ordering online, but shipping it directly then spending the extra money for the gift wrapping mm-hmm. and just having it all sent right there.
I think so. I mean, ours, we don't have to worry about our grandgirls don't live too far from us, but we're going to do what our granddaughter or what our daughter did. Yesterday, they dropped off a little gift at the back door and then went around to the front windows and waved, and we talked, and we could talk through the window and stuff, and that was it.
Yeah.
So so that was nice. So I think we're just going to bring the presents over there and, you know, knock on the back door and say, you know, send them a little text saying, check your back door, and they'll have that.
312-981-7200 if you want to share anything that you bought or a deal that you found, or if you changed everything up this year, or did you still go out? I know some of you still did, if you're willing to talk about that. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. 718 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 10 o'clock. Coming up after the check of 730 news, Tony Anscombe will teach us how to stay safe while doing all of this online shopping. Roger, did you sign in or did you check out as a guest?
I signed in.
See?
Because I have a major account. You know who
it's
with.
You have a major account?
Well, you know who it's with.
Must have been Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Did they have a Black Friday sale, Disney?
Yeah, they had a lot. They had a discount on the total amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the stuff that I was going to buy anyway for the girls, a lot of them were discounted already.
Now, a quick update for anybody who's an old-time listener of us. When I had my show overnights, Roger was with me and Jess was with me, and Roger had talked for a while. He'd saved up. We made him get an account, pushed him to start saving money for this trip to Disney, and he mm-hmm. had it and was ready to go, and then, of course, the coronavirus hit.
Yeah.
And so what is the plan right now? Refresh our memories.
We are going again in August. We've pushed it up about 2 weeks earlier, maybe 3 weeks earlier in August, as opposed to the end of August, because the girls may be moving into a different school district, which would start earlier. In the year. And Disney was beautiful. Everything stays the same. The airlines were beautiful. It's all been rebooked. We even got some money back on the new tickets.
Wow.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm keeping an eye on now is they keep adding stuff or doing different stuff. Like now they have a thing called a park hopper, which apparently allows you to go from one park to the
other.
Right. But it's very restricted now. They've just reinstituted it, but it's very restricted. You can't do it until 2 in the afternoon. But now the parks are opening at staggered hours.
Is this all in response to COVID?
Yes.
So the hope is that we mm-hmm. get to a place by the time you go mm-hmm. that maybe they can start relaxing those restrictions a little bit, right?
One would hope so. They just increased from 25 to 35% occupancy in the parks. They are still requiring and very vigilant about it. Proper face mask worn properly. They're still restricting a lot of the exhibits where you can't be socially distant, and they're still restricting a lot of the restaurants. And then the park hours are, like I said, staggered and shorter. So they're still doing a lot of vigilant precautions at the park.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, and because it's still... Everything is still so unsure, but I do know because Bridget said she's not going anywhere until she gets a vaccine.
So that's interesting. So yeah. If the vaccine is not available as of yet, we're assuming that mm-hmm. there will be vaccines out there that have mm-hmm. been approved by then, mm-hmm. but we don't know how quickly you'll be able to get it.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
If you're not able to get your hands on it, you guys will delay.
If we're not able to get our hands on it, I don't know. You know, so much up in the air.
Yeah.
If we can't get it in time, I don't know what Disney and the airlines would allow us to do again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And how much longer might we delay it? I don't know. We'll see. So much still up in the air, and I think with a lot of stuff out there with this virus. So it's, you know, we'll take it day by day. I'm keeping an eye on all the news coming out of Disney World. And the thing that's kind of nice is they're, through the app that we have, they're sending a lot of videos and a lot of stuff that we didn't get last year from them, because I think they understand that people who want to come to the park or had reservations, because there's still some hotels, residency in the hotels is also restricted to a percentage. So there's not a lot of people staying on site. Most of the traffic they're getting is people who live in Florida. So we're dealing with that. And they're offering a lot more things to the people who want to come or who have planned to come. And I think the girls are happy with that. And so I keep sending them stuff to try to keep their interest going. And I think it's good. We just got them a couple of new Christmas stockings with their names embroidered on it, which is nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And, okay. So, well, that's good. Yeah. Well, it's good to have the update. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that if you're looking for a stocking stuffer, just a maybe a little book or something like that,
just
for somebody
a little light
who might want to
material.
Do some reading,
yeah.
Maybe something to keep, you know, on the lid on the back of the commode.
Sure. How about on the nightstand?
Well, or on a nightstand. Some of us do our best reading in there, Rod.
Sure,
it's the only
sure.
time you can get any peace, for goodness sakes. What else can you be alone? What else are you allowed to lock a
that
door?
That is true.
It's the only time.
True.
Do you have any good recommendations? Anything you've heard of recently?
Well, I hear there's this pretty inspiring book written by some news guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Unplanned Life.
The Unplanned Life. Okay.
And it's offered through Eckhart's Press. Local publisher, great people, and look at that. See, someone's calling to order already.
Oh, it's like we're doing a pledge drive. And if you call right now, Roger will charge you the exact price on the book for this book.
That's funny. Yeah, it's doing very well. It's we will know in less than a week now. I think December 1st. It will be announced whether it has won, because it was a finalist, whether it has won the 2020 Book of the Year from the Chicago Writers Association.
Really?
On the nonfiction indie, or independent publisher category. It was one of three finalists.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know who you're up against?
Two really good books.
Oh, wow.
It's like somebody who I think spent like... a year on the Obama campaign. I think that was one of them, and the other one. They really, really look good. So just to be nominated, you know, it's one of those.
It's
like, I'm kind
it's
of excited.
It's an honor to be nominated.
It is a great honor.
Well, good.
So, yeah, so go to Eckhart's Press if you are interested. And as I've told my wife, who has just finished it, which is... She had like the first copy way back in April, and
I don't know. I just couldn't get into it. It just didn't grab me.
No, so she has just finished it, but she read it in different sections. She kept flipping from the front to the back to the middle and everything. I said, "Why can't you?" Well, she says, "Well, I knew a bunch of the stuff at the beginning." I go, "Yeah, but you didn't know what I wrote on Facebook." Because she's not on Facebook.
Sure.
I don't go reading her my Facebook posts or what people respond to.
Right.
So she finally finished it. She greatly enjoyed it. And
good.
A lot of other people have said some great things about it. And if you read it straight through from front to back, I think by the
get
time...
Get a prize at the end. There's like a Cracker Jack thing.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go straight
how
through
did you know?
It, no.
You got yours, right?
Yeah. I do still have mine.
So thank you very much. It's very, very nice.
Eckhart's Press, that's the only place to get it. It's not...
That's a hardcover, yeah. Or a softcover, as the case may be.
Eckhart's Press. So search Eckhart's Press, everyone. Look for Roger's book, The Unplanned Life, and buy 10 copies, and then you can just give them away to everybody.
And if you send me an email, and you can even do it to the WGN email, and let me know that you ordered, I will sign it for you. I will put a nice little message in there for you.
Excellent.
Or if you want to buy it for someone else, it'll be make, like you said, a nice Christmas gift.
All right, perfect. Real quick, Scott has called in, 720 WGN. Hey, Scott, good morning. Good morning. Hello, how are you, sir?
Well, not good. You know, I had a horrible Thanksgiving, and it reflects America's horrible Thanksgiving. I'll make it short and sweet. You got 60, 70, 80 million Americans unemployed. Our elected officials do nothing. You've got a phony stock market that's ready to explode. It doesn't reflect Main Street. People are suffering on Main Street. It's been decimated. You have a Federal Reserve that's printing up trillions and trillions of dollars like monopoly money. It's going to become devalued and worthless. You've got a Federal Reserve that's basically controlled by the Rothschilds and other international Jewish bankers. You've got a phone.
Okay. All right. Jess, we're going to screen those a little harder for the rest of the night. Okay. No, we haven't been together in a while, but let's, you know, tighten up the notches a little bit here, and let's just, you know, make sure that we're talking it through, figuring out who's calling in. So Scott's having a rough weekend. I apologize, Scott, but that show doesn't come on until 10 o'clock. I think you want to call back then. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you. Tony Anscombe is with us after the news. He is going to tell us about staying safe when you're online shopping. Because you can't, these stories have been going around. Carjackings in Chicago are through the roof right now. It's just crazy with the carjackings. But online shopping is dangerous. And my mom was just getting calls last week from Apple telling her that she can't use her phone. She's got to call back from a different number. I'm like, Mom, Apple doesn't call. That's completely phony. They're going to ask you to send a gift card or do something. So there's a lot of scams out there and a lot of people trying to steal your identity and a lot of craziness going on. So you got to be careful with everything. Tony Anscombe will be with us in just a couple of minutes to talk about ways that you should stay safe when you're online shopping. And coming up at 8 o'clock, Alderman Ray Lopez will be with us talking about that city tax increase that just went through. As our caller just mentioned a minute ago, there are a lot of problems going on, especially with loss of tax revenue, with a lot of people hurting, a lot of businesses hurting, and small businesses and the restaurants and everything else we have dealt with. It's been a tough year. And of course, Chicago saw a big hole in their budget and they approved a huge tax increase. So we'll talk to Alderman Lopez about what's going on there. Belinda Chang, our favorite holiday warrior, will be with us to give you some advice on, trying to have as normal of a holiday as possible when you have friends and family over. Later on in the show, we'll talk a little bit about online gambling, which is one of the things that has saved our state just a little bit this year. All the tax revenue that's coming in from that and marijuana has been a boon. And so we'll talk a little bit about how you can stay safe and be smart if you're doing the online gambling. So lots to do over the next couple of hours. Matt Bubala in for John Records Landecker here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720. We're here until 10 o'clock. We've got Tony Anscombe with us. Tony is a, what are you, Tony? An IT security expert, I guess, would be the proper way to introduce you, right?
That's a good way. My official title, Matt, is Chief Security Evangelist.
Well, we need a lot of security in the world these days, don't we? All we've heard for years and years and years, it seems lately, is about things that are going wrong when we get online. People stealing identities, people preying on the elderly and those who are not as technologically savvy. What is the number one thing you're seeing right now that you wish people knew better to avoid?
Well, the number one thing has to be all those phishing emails in our inboxes and the ability to identify which ones are fake and which ones are actually legitimate. It's a tough one. I mean, I'm sure over Black Friday, your inbox has been full too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. But I feel like mostly it's from people that I have registered with or done business with, have checked out with. Are there a lot of ads that we're getting on Black Friday that we should be very suspicious of?
There's a lot of things that end up in our inboxes that are either trying to take us to a fraudulent website and get us to transact, and they cyber criminals will use things like Black Friday or certain times of the year to send out their campaigns. They'll try and steal our credentials, or they'll try and in some way extract other information from us that they can abuse.
So when I get all those ads today, and I did, I had 30, 40 more ads from places that I have done business with, what should I do? Because you get an email and it says, click here to Black Friday shop. Should I not be clicking on that? Or how do I know if it came from a legitimate source or if I should be wary of it?
Correct. Don't click on it. By clicking on it, if it is fraudulent, firstly, the cyber criminal will know that you've clicked on it because the emails are tracked. And if you end up on their website, not the real website, then they also know you landed there too. So if you see an advert for Brand X, then go to your browser, type in Brand X, and shop directly. Just don't click the links in the emails. And how would a cyber criminal know that you maybe shopped with that brand? Well, has that brand had a data breach in the last couple of years? Was any of your data part of that breach? So do they know that you are a customer, which is why you may be being targeted by them?
Well, I would imagine, Tony, that it doesn't even have to be that brand. So if I do a lot with Apple, I buy iPhones or computers from there. They maybe have not had a breach, but if I had a breach with somebody else I transact with, I would imagine that they're all tracking where we're visiting and all sorts of things we're doing. Isn't it easy for somebody, if they get that information, to know a lot more than just one brand that we do business with?
Absolutely. And there's even, you know, you probably share information online on social media and such like about some of the cool things that you purchase, or even maybe here on air. And that would also give somebody that information.
Well, and even when we don't do that, it never fails to amaze me that I will go to a website on a computer at home and I will search for something. And then an hour later, I'll be on my phone on Facebook and there's an ad for it in my feed. And I sit back and I think, okay, wow, these computers aren't tied together. At least I don't think they are. It's like they know who you are and what you're doing very often. You are really being tracked. I mean, these personalized ads are pretty amazing, aren't they?
They are. And let me just explain. That's probably because you're logged into Facebook on both machines.
Okay.
So if you're logged on, just say you're looking at your laptop and you remain logged into Facebook, and on that website they have the Facebook pixel, which is a piece of tracking information behind it, and the Facebook logo, then they're picking up that you are browsing there. When you go to the phone, they know that you were on that website.
Can you explain a pixel to me a little more? It's funny, I just heard that term for the first time in relation to tracking in the last week, because a company I work with is working on a new website, and they talked about a pixel to find information. And I was, I know that they track and they see what we do. I know there's analytics on things, but this sounds like much more than what we all realized was going on.
It's a method of tracking your browsing, your habit online. So the Facebook pixel is used by a lot of advertisers to track where you've been and what you've been looking at. And then that's used to place ads around your social media interactions.
And so when we're searching for something online, oftentimes somebody else is going to know about it. There's not a lot of anonymity for us when we're doing our searches, is there?
No, in the example you used with Facebook, my recommendation is to log out.
Always log out afterwards?
If they log out, they don't know who you are.
But once you've searched for if you're searching on your browser, make sure you're not logged into Facebook.
Well, exactly, because your browser is automatically logged in, isn't it? You've told it to remember and not to log you out, so that when you go back, you don't actually have to type in your username and password.
Right.
It keeps you logged in. Actually log out.
Okay, tell me a little bit about when we are buying products online. You say that you should always sign out as a guest. Is that only if you don't already have an account with them? Is that only if you're visiting somebody new? What if it's somebody that you already do business with?
If it's somebody you shop with frequently, then great to have an account, but make sure that account has all the right security on it. So if possible, have that extra layer of two-factor authentication, you know, where they send you the text message or the SMS that will allow you to log in with that extra piece of security. But if, over this holiday period, you're buying something special for a loved one or a friend, and it's the only time you're going to shop with this vendor, when at the end of the process they're going to turn and say, would you like to create an account? You don't need an account. This is a one-off purchase. And by not having an account, you stop yourself, your own data, being part of any future data breach that company may be subjected to by a cyber criminal. So you're actually protecting yourself.
Interesting. You mentioned that you should never use a debit card when you are paying for anything. That's not only for online. Isn't that for anywhere? I often go into a store, if I'm using the bank card, it'll say, is this a debit card? Yes, no. And I imagine a lot of people just say yes because it is a debit card, and then they're going to put in their PIN number to complete that transaction. We never want to do that if we can avoid it, correct?
Certainly online, I would not use a debit card, because if your data does become part of a data breach, then a cyber criminal potentially has a card that's linked to your bank account. Now, if you've got overdraft protection on your bank account now links to your savings account and will keep refilling. So if they happen to get the card details and start making fraudulent transactions, they can empty your bank account and part of your savings account. And maybe before the bank has realized there's fraud going on. So it's a protection for yourself. You know, if somebody runs up charges on a credit card, you know, you're still going to be able to pay your mortgage and hopefully live from what's in your bank account. Yeah, so it's a protection for you. But if possible, use a third-party payment option like Apple Pay or Google Pay or PayPal, because those services don't actually send your card data. What they do is they send transaction codes. So your card data remains on your device. It never actually goes across to the merchant.
So online, if possible, sign up with one of those services, because then there's at least supposedly an added layer of protection. If there's a breach, then they're just going to have a code from Apple that Apple knows, but it doesn't tie directly to your card.
Absolutely, yeah, that's correct. And if you are going to use a credit card, make sure you've got one with a very limited credit limit on it, because that also helps protect you.
Because they can't then go buy a house with your card, right?
Exactly. Well, it depends what your credit limit is, of course, Matt.
Right. Well, mine wouldn't get them very far. Trust me, Tony. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Tony Anscombe is with us. He is a cybersecurity expert and an IT expert. He's got 25 years of security experience doing this type of thing. If you have a question about things you've seen or things you've worried about, 312-981-7200 is the number. More advice next here on 720 WGN. Happy Ball here, 720 WGN. It's 7:48 in Chicago. It's a nice, crisp night out, honestly. It's a good walk in downtown Chicago. So many people over by the Wrigley Building and the former Tribune Tower taking pictures with the holiday lights. Magnificent Mile is all lit up. It's a beautiful time to be downtown, socially distanced, of course. Tony Anscombe is on the phone with us. He is with Tony. What is the name of the company, and where can people find out more about what you do?
So the name of the company I work for is ESET, and they can find out more from ESET.com, that's ESET.com, and we're a cybersecurity company, and for most people, you'd know us as an antivirus company. So we're the antivirus software that sits on your machine and protects you.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit more about one of the things that you recommend is not conducting a transaction on public Wi-Fi. A lot of times we'll go to a restaurant or some sort of business that offers free Wi-Fi, and it's a very nice thing because you don't want to use your data and you want to surf and everything like that if you have to wait. But how careful do we have to be about what we're actually doing when we're on those?
Well, the word public Wi-Fi should tell you everything. It's public, and unfortunately, it's not encrypted like your home Wi-Fi is. So when we're at home, we have to put in that long string of password letters to access our networks, don't we? And when we're on public Wi-Fi, typically, it's just a matter of creating an account and logging in. But unfortunately, what you then send potentially is being sent in clear text so anybody else on that public Wi-Fi could see what's coming from you to whoever it is you're sending it to. The other unfortunate fraud that is often there as well is I can create a hotspot Wi-Fi of the same name. So if you're in a restaurant called Tony's, yeah, and I'm another customer, I could hotspot my phone and call it Tony's, and how do you know which one you're connecting to?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? You can just offer free Wi-Fi with that name, and then people might accidentally log on to it. You're giving ideas now. We need to stop that. That's interesting. And so if you are using Wi-Fi and you need to make a transaction, just sign off of it, just go back onto your data?
Well, there's several things. You can either use a VPN, but that for many people is a step to, you know, maybe a step of complication. But just disconnect from the Wi-Fi and use your data network off your mobile device.
When you mention our home Wi-Fi, do we ever need to be worried about that, that people can tap into our home Wi-Fi, or do you feel that once your Wi-Fi is set up, you have a name, you have your little code at home, it's safe?
Generally, as long as you've set the passwords on the devices that connect to your Wi-Fi or run your Wi-Fi. So, for example, the router, so where the cable comes into your house and then your Wi-Fi is distributed from there, make sure that it doesn't have the default password set. That's one of the biggest mistakes people make. They don't change the passwords on the devices that they bring into the house. And then you add in your smart home devices and your clever doorbells or whatever it is that you're adding to your network. You know, make sure you set good, strong passwords on them, and make sure you continually update all the software on those devices. Yeah, software companies release those updates to keep us secure, but they're only secure if you're updating.
At the beginning of the pandemic, Zoom blew up and everybody's doing meetings on Zoom. But then there were all these issues with Zoom bombings and people breaking into Zoom. When we're doing a lot of video chatting now, whether it's for business or family, is there anything we need to be concerned about to protect ourselves with things like that?
Well, so there is some good guidance on Zoom meetings. In fact, early in the pandemic, Matt, I wrote a blog, which you'll find on welivesecurity.com, on how to set your Zoom meetings to be secure. But in very basic terms, make sure the meeting has a password. Make sure the password is not part of the meeting link. And hold people in the lobby. And, you know, those few things will keep most of your meetings pretty secure, because it means that only the people that you want on the call are in the call, and anybody else trying to access the call is not going to be able to connect because they don't have a password.
So enable that virtual waiting room, then you have to let people in. Otherwise, they're just going to pop in, and if somebody gets the code, they can just jump right in.
Absolutely, and that's where the verb Zoom bombing came from. In fact, I'm very curious to see whether that makes it into the dictionary at the end of this year.
Well, Jeffrey Toobin's hoping not, but that was a whole different story, I guess.
Yes.
312-981-7200 if you have a quick question for Tony before we wrap things up. Let's talk, though, a little bit. I know it's not necessarily the cybersecurity, but the phone calls that are coming now. I had to go buy some gift cards recently for a business event, so I had to buy like 10 gift cards. And I got stopped at checkout and was asked, were you told to buy these? Is somebody on the phone with you? I started getting all these questions, and the checkout person said to me, we get elderly people in here all the time buying $500, $600 worth of gift cards. They'll have somebody on the phone instructing them what to do, and I will try to tell them, stop, this is a scam, and they'll insist on buying them. It sounds like it's become a real problem.
It is, and we've all had those calls, haven't we, at home, where you pick up the phone and somebody says, hey, this is Microsoft, and you know, we've noticed you've got a problem with your laptop, and we need to help you. And, of course, those people are trying to get payment through those gift cards and such like. You know, I think I heard you say on the show just before I joined about Apple that
my mom got a call from them, allegedly, not from them, but she got a call saying, we're from Apple and you can't use your phone. It's got a problem. You know, you need to call us back from another line or something like that. And she called me. I said, no, there's no way that's true. They wouldn't be calling you like that.
Well, the problem is there's many devices that we put into our homes. And if somebody then goes onto social media and says, I've just taken delivery of device X, and a cyber criminal notices that, then actually it can seem like a very legitimate call, couldn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you've just bought a weather station or something else that might connect, or a pollution monitor, and you've plugged it in. Now, if I rang up and turned and says, hey, mate, your pollution monitor's out of date and it needs a new firmware upgrade, could you allow me connection? And we'd just charge you $25 in gift cards for that. But what I'm really impressed with your story there, wasn't it great that the checkout person actually checked with you that you weren't actually a victim of fraud?
It was great. It was great. And what's fascinating when you talk about this, though, is that do you really feel that on social media, if you post something, somebody's out there looking for that? That seems incredibly time consuming for these criminal minds. I would imagine it's more they're getting data on sales and finding out you bought something, or just taking a wild guess that you have an iPhone, or maybe there's ways for them to find out you have an iPhone in general. Are they really, is there really a lot of fraud because somebody posted something online, somebody else paid attention and found that out?
Well, potentially, if somebody's trying to create sophisticated identity theft, they could be scraping your social media account. So if they've already got a piece, a big chunk of your data from a data breach, they may actually go and scrape your social media accounts to see what other information they could glean from it.
It's a crazy world. You'd think if these people would put their time and money into actual productive things, we'd be curing cancer or something like that.
If only that was true. Unfortunately, you know, there's always bad people and there's always good people.
Well, and I guess that's not the worst thing in the world for you. That certainly means that you'll always be in business and you guys will always have new scams to have to figure out. You've been in this for 25 years. A lot has changed in cyber, in our cyber lives in the last 25 years. Are you amazed at how far things have come and how far the criminal minds have come too?
Yeah, you're making me sound old now, man.
Sorry.
But yes, things have changed. I mean, when I started out in cybersecurity, I worked for a bank and there was no internet. So it was the days of mainframes and darkrooms. So yes, a lot has changed. It would have been very difficult for somebody to create fraudulent transactions or get on somebody's device back then, because of course there wasn't actually really PCs and there was no mobile phones.
What's the latest, what's the newest thing? Is there something like that you're looking at now that we might not have even heard of yet because it hasn't become mainstream? Because I imagine there's always the new scam on the block that's just starting to take hold.
Well, actually, I think the one this year that's caught my attention is not so much aimed at a consumer, it's more aimed at business. We've all heard of ransomware, where a business suffers a cyber attack and the bad guy comes in and encrypts the data.
Yeah.
There was an attack against a company called Blackboard earlier in the year. And I think, this really highlighted that cyber criminals are becoming sophisticated, because they stopped the attack. The clever cybersecurity guys in the company stopped the attack, but then ended up having to pay the cyber criminal because he'd already taken a copy of the data. So it shows they're becoming a lot more sophisticated than they were to start with.
That seems to be happening more and more, whether it's to celebrities or companies, and the whole ransom idea, which seems so quaint in 100 years ago, is now taking hold. And I imagine that's only possible because of things like Bitcoin, right? That there are some untrackable ways to make people pay for things.
Yes. Now, I should rant for 10 minutes now about how Bitcoin should have regulation. And you should only be allowed to have a Bitcoin account if you're a validated and authenticated person. But that's a different topic.
So that, in general, I only have a minute left. In general, the idea of Bitcoin, is that something you'd say people are safe to get involved with? Or are you very leery of the whole idea of Bitcoin?
I'm very wary of it, purely because you put your trust in a digital wallet. And I think you need to understand how to secure that digital wallet and to make sure that actually you keep the coins you're holding in a safe environment. I think that's beyond many people, unfortunately.
Tony Anscombe with the advice for you for staying safe this holiday season. Find out more at eset.com, E-S-E-T.com, or Tony mentioned the blog he had written at welivesecurity.com, welivesecurity.com. Tony Anscombe, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
It's been great to be here, Matt.
Thank you, sir. Have a good holiday and stay safe when shopping online. It's time for the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Roger Badish. Coming up after that, Alderman Ray Lopez. Let's talk about the city tax increase. That's next here on 720 WGN. 809 on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 10 o'clock. Alderman Ray Lopez from the 15th is on the phone with us. Whoops, he's not on that line. He's on this line. Hey, Alderman Lopez, how are you, sir?
Matt, good evening. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you. I appreciate you working hard on a Friday night even, showing everybody that you are working no matter what, right?
That's right.
I appreciate it.
Pandemic be damned. Here we go.
Socially distanced and all, but I will keep on working. And one of the things that you've done recently is you voted against at least the property tax hike portion of the 2021 budget plan. Tell us why, because, you know, on the one hand, you're thinking $94 million, that's a bunch more money. We're raising this again. We've done enough of this. People can't afford it. On the other hand, I read that, you know, to the average $250,000 property, it's going to raise your tax about $56. Now, that's a nice dinner for you and your wife, probably. But on the other hand, we've had this crazy year where, of course, the city needs more money. So how did you fall on deciding to vote no on that?
Well, I not only voted no against the property tax, but I also voted no against the $190 million in new taxes, fees, and parking meters. And I voted no against the next automatic tax increases scheduled by Mayor Lightfoot for the next 40 years. You know, I don't think that we've done enough to justify telling taxpayers right now, at a time when everyone is struggling to maintain their jobs, if they're lucky enough to even still have them, that they need to keep coughing up more when the city of Chicago has done nothing to show that we are taking sacrifice, the same type of sacrifices that our families and residents are taking on a daily basis.
So I know that the city council and Mayor Lightfoot have had their differences, certainly in the last year or two.
That's the rumor.
I'm reading here about some of the things that happened with the budget last year. And when, you know, she was saying, listen, if you're going to vote against it, don't be coming to me for anything. And, you know, urging people to contact their representatives who voted no, things like that, that there was a bit of retribution in the past. Was it a little more amicable this year? Did she understand why there would be some dissension in the ranks when it comes to such a difficult year?
No, actually, she was completely tone deaf in that regard. And the fact that the dissension, the no votes almost doubled from one year to the next, I think amplifies that fact that she did not listen, she did not learn, and she didn't take into account people's concerns from what they were hearing from their residents. Last year, there was a lot of disagreement about how we were getting new money from the federal government under President Donald Trump. One of the main issues that I kept honing in on was the fact that we were passing a budget telling taxpayers that they had to pay for 3,100 jobs that we had no intention of ever filling. You know, that costs money. That costs over $200 million extra in the city's budget for last year that we could have saved. And now as we're looking at this budget, this pandemic budget that the mayor put forward, you know, her budget projections, her revenue projections were off. She took out 2,000 vacant jobs, but left 1,100 more in there. All while telling us that we've done everything we could to protect taxpayers' dollars. And I know we didn't. You know, she did a $94 million tax increase, along with the fact that there was over $309 million in property taxes that were set to expire because they were directed towards the library. And she just continued them to cover her budget this year. So it wasn't necessarily a $94 million tax increase. It was more like a $403 million tax increase because we could have actually refunded over $300 million in property taxes for next year.
Well, okay. So I don't know a ton about this, but when you're saying there was $300 million in library revenue or library taxes that was set to come off the books, we were going to quit all paying into that. Is that basically what that is?
Pretty much how it goes is when we assess the property tax levy, we say what the items that we have to pay for through that property tax. And one of the things that was expiring in the current levy was over $300 million in library debt, like bonds that may have been issued to build new libraries or whatnot. That had all expired so that we didn't need that $309 million for libraries anymore. So technically, one would say that if you're not needing it, you don't have to put it in the levy anymore. However, the mayor did not let the opportunity go to waste and said, well, if the library is not going to use it, I'm going to use it for what I need it for in this new budget for the city.
Well, Alderman
and
Lopez,
I still need more on top of it.
I mean, Alderman Lopez, with the year we've had, I know there's things you disagree on, that money should be cut from here and there and things like that. But with the way the revenues have fallen, if there's money we're used to paying into, would you really recommend cutting that out when, I mean, look at where else would maybe you're disagreeing with where the money's going, but with all the debts we have, with the job losses and the tax losses that we've had from revenue from restaurants and things like that, wouldn't you want to keep that money in if it was money we were already used to paying in?
That would be under the assumption that the taxpayers could afford to keep paying those dollars. And I don't think necessarily that our taxpayers can afford it for those very reasons you just mentioned. 25% of our economy has been wiped off the map right now. All of those jobs associated with it have been wiped out. People are struggling. And if you find a way to save people money, even if it's on their property taxes, we should take it. The city of Chicago did not make a single sacrifice the way so many of our families did. And I think that's where we did a disservice. I know that we're in a pandemic. I know we need revenue. But you don't kick people while they're down. And you certainly don't continue to spend like drunken sailors, where half your property taxes just go to your to your debt service.
Okay. I mean, okay. So let's stop at that. Let's talk about that. Drunken sailors spending. Is that what's really going on here? Or is it spending debt that, yeah, maybe we're in a bad spot that we have it, but we have to pay it off. What do we do? Let's ask Alderman Lopez about that next here on 720 WGN. 819 720 WGN. We're talking to Alderman Ray Lopez about the recent budget approval by the city council, but it was a contentious one and one that not everybody agreed on. Certainly Alderman Lopez, you did not agree on a lot of the spending. You mentioned spending like a drunken sailor. Is that a fair assessment of what the city's doing right now when so much of it is debt that is just hanging over our heads?
Well, I think what we've seen is for all of our non-debt related spending that we have not made any kind of sacrifices. We have not come out with any kind of efficiencies, and we are still just going along with what has always worked without even questioning if there's ways to do anything better or to protect taxpayer dollars better. And I think that is where I take issue with this budget, because once again, especially as I told the mayor's team, this budget and this crisis presented us with an opportunity to be truly transformative with how we fund and create a budget in the city of Chicago. And we missed that opportunity.
Well, what were
your... To your point, Matt, you know, the debt and things that we have to pay for, pensions and things of that nature, are not going to get any better. And next year, we are looking at a $1.5 billion pension payment that's going to be due. And after all of the budget gimmicks and smoke and mirrors that the mayor's done to get through the last two, she's going to have no choice but to do another massive tax increase next year, regardless of what the state of our economy is at that point.
You mentioned the smoke and mirrors. So a lot of it is wheeling and dealing with some of your colleagues, you know, making some things happen that make your colleagues a little bit happier about voting yes to things. Are your colleagues a little bit responsible too?
Well, I think definitely not just my colleagues, but my colleagues for the past, you know, 30, 40 years that have never really asked how things were getting paid for and just piled on debt upon debt upon debt are definitely responsible. I mean, when I took office in 2015, my first budget vote had a tax increase in it. And I stated at that time that I did not want to keep passing the buck to our children and grandchildren the way it had been passed on to me as I was sitting in that chamber in my late 30s. You know, we have to make decisions. We have to look at what we're doing is working. And if we see that it's not, we have to make some tough choices. Now, our families know how to downsize, and our families know how to make sacrifices when their income is diminished. We have never done that. We've just said, well, we'll just tax people more. We'll just take more out of their pockets. And I think that's very much an irresponsible way of governing.
Well, Alderman Lopez, what services or what costs would you recommend that we cut back on?
Well, I think for starters, one of the issues that the CFL mentioned, which is the Chicago Federation of Labor, was the fact that, you know, we have to look at just from our administration and bureaucracy, you know, you look at supervisors to employees, and most of those ratios are, you know, six employees for every one supervisor, seven employees for every one supervisor, when in the real world, in the private sector, those numbers are double. I mean, we have a lot of bloated bureaucracy and administration, the supervisory and managerial levels in the city of Chicago. And those are things that we need to look at. Maybe we don't need the amount of duplicity that we see in our government in between our departments. Maybe every department doesn't need its own press office or its own public information officer in a new 21st century government. But unless you actually sit down and go department by department, you will never know where the true amount of efficiency lies. The fact that the city council historically only allows for 2 weeks worth of questioning and is still getting answers even after the budget is passed, shows how disengaged we are from the true budgeting process of trying to make this government more efficient, and that really has to change. I'm thankful next year, because of a resolution that I put forward, we will have quarterly oversight of the budget moving forward for the next 2 years. So I think that'll put us on a better track for the 2022 budget than we have been in a long time.
All right, so Alderman Lopez, I got to ask, you're I ask you, you know, what should Mayor Lightfoot do? And you say that there's too much bloat in government, too much duplicity. Have you put forward, have you looked at the departments and said, hey, we can reduce by X amount? And is that even an amount that's truly, listen, I know every dollar counts, but how much money could we really save from that? I mean, we're talking billions and billions of dollars that we're talking about here. Can you save more than $100 million or $50 million by reducing, the employment levels within the government and the city council and the city of Chicago?
If you were to take and go for those just sheer employment numbers that I just spoke about, mm-hmm. And couple that with the vacancies that are still left in this budget, you could easily take out $200 million, otherwise the equivalent of your property tax and then some, mm-hmm. out of this budget. We would not have been asking our taxpayers to pay more simply because we did not want to go and look harder than what we did. So, yes, we could have saved taxpayers' dollars.
Okay, well,
millions of dollars.
Let me ask you, with what Mayor Lightfoot had to do to get this budget approved, the trades that she made, if she had gone to everybody and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to reduce all the staffing level. Would people have approved that, or would they have fallen in trouble with labor unions and everything else that would have been upset that these numbers are going down? Because, you know, it's in this economy, everybody that has a job needs their job, too. I imagine there would have been a lot of pushback on that.
I would imagine that, yes, there would be pushback against union people losing their jobs, and rightfully so, because those are usually the individuals who do the dirty work of keeping our city moving forward. But the question that you have to ask yourself is, while you're paying and protecting for all of those jobs without question, is our city's service delivery improving or at least maintaining? And the answer is no. So we're spending money to protect jobs on all levels while we're not providing service for our residents. Why, there was just an investigation not too long ago about zip codes with thousands of unclosed city service request calls being made. Are those individuals in those zip codes getting their tax dollars, the maximum amount of benefit from their tax dollars? I'd say not. And we need to reevaluate why that is, especially if we have so many supervisors out there for every employee who are truly not supervising and making sure that the job gets done. If that's the case, then we need to evaluate and see, do we really need to have all these supervisors? Do you need to have a budget with 1,000 vacancies you have no intention of filling, costing taxpayers almost $170 million extra in this budget, simply so that the mayor can have a cushion from one quarter to the next? There's a lot of things in there that we can still do and should have done. Unfortunately, we have not done it.
Just to jump real quick, because we're running out of time, and I have to ask, we're heading into winter, COVID is still raging, there's hope on the horizons, but where I have my offices here on Clark and Grand, we've got the street shut down right now, big tents up, restaurants trying to keep going. It's going to get freezing out soon. It's going to be very difficult for them to keep going. Are you happy with what the city is trying to do to help those businesses?
No, I'm not, because the city has not helped every business the way it has helped downtown. Those businesses that you see with the little igloos and the street closures, that's great for the River North area. But outside of that central business district, those same kind of policies have not made their way throughout the entirety of the city of Chicago. And in addition, the fact that we have gotten to this point where we allowed the entire summer to get past us, where we have failed to educate our people to know how to protect themselves safely as we deal with the winter, I think was a complete misstep by government on multiple levels, including the city of Chicago.
Are you hopeful that a Democratic administration taking over will mean good things for the city of Chicago? President Trump has certainly been no fan of the city in a lot of his speeches and no fan of Mayor Lightfoot. Do you think things will get better under the Biden administration?
Well, I hope that the Biden administration knows that Democratic cities are not the enemy. I think we have our issues, but we need to be partners. We are all representative of the same Americans that help get those individuals elected as well in our cities, and they need as much help as we can provide. And I think that the sooner we start focusing on what's going on with COVID as being an American issue that we need to resolve in our country, the better off every city will be, including Chicago.
Alderman Lopez, you've been very good. This is the second time you've been on with me. I know you don't shy away from the microphone and you're willing to talk to people about what's going on in the city. But it also leads me to wonder if come 2023, when it's time for re-election, if you might be trying to get a new job title.
Well, let me just get through 2020 first. We've got about 5 weeks to go. God only knows if there's going to be like a lake monster that comes out and, you know, I have no idea. Or the aliens arrive. I have no idea yet. Yeah. Let me just get past 2020 first.
Alderman Ray Lopez from the 15th, we always appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, man. Have a great weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend as well. Stay safe, stay healthy, and save up your dollars for that new tax increase on our property taxes. All right, it's 8:28. We're going to get into the newsroom in a minute, get you your News Nation update with Roger Badish. Then Belinda Chang will jump on the phone with us. She is a specialist when it comes to serving and holidays and having people over, but you can't do that right now. So you got through Thanksgiving. What are you going to do about the holidays? Hanukkah is coming up. We've got Christmas coming up. You've got the new year coming up. All sorts of good times and festivities normally this time of year, but it's a whole new world. How are you going to handle all of those things? She'll give us some tips on what to do with that. We'll talk to somebody from casino.org about betting and online gambling. It's become quite the rage this year. Find out a little bit more about that. And our buddy Mark Carmen might jump on the phone after 9:30 to preview that Bears-Packers game on Sunday night. Lots to do. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. The holidays are here. It's officially the season. Magnificent Mile is all lit up. Thanksgiving is now past us, so you might be figuring out, is there any way that you can still have people over at some point, or have an office party, or do something fun and interesting with this season, even if it just has to be you at home with whoever you're quarantined with? Joining us on the phone right now is our favorite party goer, Belinda Chang. Hey, Belinda, how are you?
Hi, Matt. It's been forever. I'm so happy to hear you.
I know, and we're still stuck in this whole mess. For goodness sakes.
Yes, we are.
You know, when I think about people that have been affected by this, I often think of you, because you were throwing parties, giving parties, telling people how to give parties. Now nobody can really have no parties. That's got to be affecting you quite a bit.
Well, it was initially. I mean, I had that call in March where, not that call, not that one call, maybe a dozen calls with everyone letting me know that they were canceling their in-real-life events for 2020. So I sat on my couch and didn't speak for a day, and then I turned everything around and tried to do everything that I did before virtually.
And how is that working out? I mean, a lot of businesses have done whatever they can to pivot, whatever they can to stay relevant. Doing things virtually for meetings, for things like that, for just general talking, that works. How has it worked when it comes to giving parties or doing things like that?
It's actually been pretty amazing. My team, we founded kind of a production services company since March, has done over 100 virtual events at this point for 80 Fortune 500 companies, so a lot of corporate clients. And it's been so crazy. So we do events anywhere from 6 people up to 300,000 live. And we've done everything from what everybody's doing, kind of a virtual happy hour, but we kind of make it a little more luxe. We send everyone all over the world, in up to 4 countries we've done so far simultaneously, boxes, experience boxes, we call them, with all the ingredients pre-measured to make cocktails, or all the ingredients that are all prepared, sort of your mise en place, if you will, to do a tasting menu, Michelin star caliber, with all of the wines, and then everything in between. So it's been such a wild ride, but it's been a lot of fun.
It's got to be. And I imagine between the technology and how good people are or aren't at that, plus sending them the ingredients, all these things you would have been doing for them previously, how difficult has that been? I imagine it's varying degrees of success.
Well, I've spent more time at, you know, FedEx than I ever have in my life combined to date. So that's been really interesting. And I think it's been really a great challenge and a lot of fun. And maybe I'm one of those people that's good in a pandemic, because I love to figure things out. And so, you know, a lot of people have been doing these sort of webinar style things and Instagram lives and Facebook lives, but I'm trying to get this sort of communication and community and connection on screen that we were able to get before in real life, or at least as close as we can to it. So we've done crazy things. I have a friend who's a Rockette who is furloughed. I mean, they just went back to work, and she and her husband are both dancers, and they put together sort of dance, TikTok dance type dances, choreography that we could all do together on screen. My only requirement for that was that everybody could do this choreography with a glass of wine or a cocktail in their hand. So, you know, we found all the ways to make this not a passive sport and not sort of a sedentary thing. The hallmark of all of our virtual experiences is that people are standing up and they're shaking cocktails or they're sabering bottles or decanting wine, and everybody's laughing and everybody's engaging and everyone gets a voice and everyone gets to talk. So, you know, I'm the kind of person who, as you know, I love to throw parties, whether it's for clients or for myself. I mean, I have this great studio in Streeterville, and I used to have people here for cocktails, for full meals, for dips for dinner, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week. And now I'm doing all of that on screen, 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Wow. Well, when it comes to all of us and our homes, you know, we're not supposed to be having people over for the holidays. We're not supposed to be doing a lot of things. So
right.
Do you have some tips on people who maybe miss having a few friends over, or people who don't love the idea of not being able to have their families over at the holidays? What should we be working on?
Yeah, well, you know, I love these, all the face-to-face platforms. I know that people have done sort of community events and family events and things like that on a Zoom or on a Microsoft Teams or on Facebook. There's a lot of ways to do it. But I think what's really important is that with the people who are maybe not so tech savvy, you know, my parents, for instance, to get them kind of in a practice Zoom or practice live stream, help them set up the camera and help them do a little better job on their lighting, and help them sort of set up the table and show them the angles so that it looks like everybody's sitting together at dinner. And then I also love when there's sort of a common experience aside from, you know, being stuck on screen together, in that we always send recipes, whether it's a recipe for an easy cocktail that everyone probably has the ingredients for at home so that everyone can make it together and then sort of sit down to enjoy it together. I also love when people sort of specify maybe a theme for the virtual gathering. So, you know, if you do like a Spanish tapas party together or a dim sum party and everybody orders Chinese, I think when you all have that to talk about and that to sort of peep across the screens, it really makes it a much more sort of fulfilling experience. So, you know, give a dress code, have a music playlist. I think all of those things make it really feel like those dinner parties that we miss so much and those, you know, times that we had at restaurants that we miss so much. We do it every Sunday, this virtual boozy brunch. We've been doing it for 37 weeks, I think, now at this point, and it's just 1 hour where we send out cocktail recipes, wine recommendations, and also a recipe for something to cook or bake. And it's so much fun. We all do it together, and it's people from all over the world.
So how does a family do that? For you, you know what you're doing. You know how to put this together. How does somebody do that with, like you said, your parents who aren't great on the whole technology in the first place, or friends that are distant? Is it just coming up with an idea and making recommendations, or how do you pull that off?
Yeah. I think it's a lot like hosting a party at your home, which I know you love to do. You know, if it's going to be like a Sunday football viewing party, then everybody is tuned into the game. You might say, you know what, we're going to be getting some beers for this one, and we're doing, you know, my favorite recipe for guacamole, here it is, or everyone's going to order out from, you know, a steakhouse, whatever it is, and then you just get everybody to do the version of that they can from whenever they are, and then you're sitting together, you know, having steaks together, having chips and dips and guacamole together, and watching the game together. That way, if you have a couple people who are in this group who are a little more introverted, you know, they have really easy entrees and things to talk about, and then it makes it a lot more natural. I know the first few of these that I did, I mean, like I said, we did some things that were very high-end and were people from all over the world, and they were sort of investor dinners. And then, of course, I've done a lot of these with my family as well. You know, people were really uncomfortable, right? You get on screen, you're like, what is supposed to happen now? But if you have something to kind of do together and something to drink together and something to eat together, I think it makes it a lot more comfortable and a lot easier. And then the conversation really comes and flows.
Well, it's kind of nice to have something you all do together, right? Even if it's just for 10 or 15 minutes, sipping some wine or something to like break the ice. And even when it's family, who you should all be able to talk to, sometimes if there's nobody driving that ship, it's a little tough to keep things going when you're not all in person.
Right. I mean, I see all these kind of going viral, these TikTok family dance videos, right? And they all look like they're having so much fun. And I think there's something to that. If you're doing an activity that maybe everyone doesn't naturally do, like dance or yoga or, I don't know, tarot card reading, we've done all of these things and more. We even did a dancercism. Okay. Where we were all just sort of moving wildly and getting rid of all the stress. But, you know, I might normally not take a dancersism class, but on a screen with a lot of people that I know who are not necessarily good dancers, I don't count myself as one either, but sort of all inhibitions were gone. And it was just, it was so, so much fun. And, you know, people were doing it from everywhere. And there's all these sort of commonalities and experience with dance and with, you know, beverages, drinking, sipping, shaking. Yeah.
It's really fun to think about that there are ways if we embrace it. So is that part of the mantra as well, is just you've got to figure out, you know, we know what went wrong. We know what's going on. We have to figure out how to embrace it and find a way to have fun.
That's it. I think, you know, you have to, it's been going on for a long time now. We don't know when it's going to end. So I am definitely a poly positive kind of gal. So I'm always trying to make the best of every situation. And you read all these studies, people really, as humans, we have a human need, and that is to connect with other humans, right? In a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And so I think these virtual events, these virtual dinners, you know, hanging out on screen, doing something fun or delicious together can fulfill that need. I mean, I know that in the very beginning of the pandemic, this brunch we were doing every Sunday from March until now, you know, we had hundreds and hundreds of people. And then you could tell that sort of over time, everyone's like, I'm on a Zoom all day for work. I don't want to do it on a Sunday as well. And there was a sort of a period where people were like, you know, we love you, but we're not into it right now. But now they're starting to come back. And I think that this virtual experience thing and this virtual dinner thing is something that's going to go on for a long time. I think what's amazing about it, Matt, is I can be with my cousin in Taipei and also my uncle in Singapore and a friend who owns a winery in Italy all at the same time. You know, all sort of like all the global geographical limitations are completely taken away. And I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, that really is. And if you can get the technology to work, that's sometimes the tough part, right? I know yesterday we were Zooming with family and everybody froze up at one point. We're like, all right, well, I guess that's the end of this.
Well, it is entirely possible that we've really broken the internet at this point, right? with all the Black Friday shopping, too, I'm guilty. I've been on the internet all day.
Yeah, it's
looking for deals.
it's funny. Yesterday, it was exactly at 4 o'clock when everything froze on my Zoom with four family members.
Gosh.
And I thought, wow, I wonder if this is the exact time that half the country decided to start their Zoom calls and it just froze up.
They're like, the turkey's ready, you know, we've had a bite and now it's just time and they all got online.
Let's talk to everybody.
Well, I mean, I think that'll work itself out. I know that in my studio apartment right now, which is a live workspace, I've never had this many. I've now got 6 devices on Wi-Fi. So we're definitely testing the limits here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But Linda, if people want more information about you or tips for how they could do things a little better this holiday season, where can they go?
Yeah, I'm at www.belindachang.com, easy peasy. And then on Instagram, you can find me at Belinda_Chicago. And I love to help with all virtual experiences and, you know, tips for drinking. I'm always at your disposal.
Well, if there's ever been a call for anybody in 2020, it's somebody that says, I have tips for drinking.
Lots of them. Lots of tips, Matt.
Belinda, thank you so much. Have a great holiday weekend, and we look forward to seeing you in 2021.
My pleasure. Happy holidays.
All right. Happy holidays to you. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. You can't help but put a smile on your face when that song is playing. I don't think there's any way around that. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you until 10. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Raj, I don't know if you followed the news yesterday at all or if you stayed away because you were away. You didn't work yesterday, did you? Or did
you? No, I didn't work, but you know me. I'm always following
you're
the news.
You're always following things that are going on. I don't know if you followed this. What was going on in Denmark?
With the minks. Yeah.
They're
being forced out of the ground.
I'm going to confess, not having a lot of knowledge on mink.
No, I don't either.
I know that, you know, you got a mink coat and we throw blood on it and all this, you know, fur coats have gotten a bad rap over the years, right?
Right.
And they're mink coats. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't know much about the mink, but the mink is where the mink coat comes from, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in Denmark, they have a huge farming population on minks.
Yeah.
They raise these minks, but they are being infected with a mutated form of coronavirus. And they have passed it along to humans over there in a few places. I think like only, what was it?
A couple of the farms, I think. Yeah. Where, I mean, you know, where they...
At least 12 people were infected with a mutated form of the coronavirus originating at mink farms, prompting Denmark to order more than 15 million minks to be killed over fears that they would pass the strain on to humans. They're basically banning mink farming in, through all of 2021. So it's going to be a huge thing there. But, so they're, you know, culling all these minks, and then they're digging up these graves, dumping them into them. And the headlines were pretty crazy yesterday, basically saying that, you know, these minks are rising from the dead. They're not.
No.
But their bodies were filling up with gas, pushing them up out of the ground.
Yeah. You're when right. I read that, I did a double take on it. I'm like, what? What?
It was quite the misleading headline by many major news organizations yesterday, but it got you to click and look.
Yeah.
And then today, there's a story in the Tribune that there's, I think in Wisconsin, there's mink farms. Coronavirus is striking American mink farms. Illinois' shrinking fur industry has so far escaped the virus. But mink farms, outbreaks of coronavirus have struck mink farms in Wisconsin and Michigan. So I started reading up on the mink a little bit. It's a very interesting story, how mink became so popular. You know that we have been wearing minks since at least the 11th century?
Oh, I'm sure.
It goes way back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, animal fur in general has often been used for centuries to make clothing, mostly for the warmth. For coats and stuff like that, so and capes.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't find anything unusual that it's been around that long.
Two species exist today. One other one, the sea mink, is now extinct due to centuries of trapping. Both of the surviving species have thick, soft, water repellent fur. So there's the American mink and the critically endangered European mink. Part of the reason the European mink is so endangered is because the American mink was brought over to Europe, and the American mink are driving the European mink away, which is somewhat oddly ironic, if you ask me. And interesting.
Yeah.
But they're not rising from the dead here in America, just
no,
over in Denmark.
No, no. Did the story say anything about the mink farms here? I didn't read the whole thing.
That one, the one from yesterday, did not, but there is an article in the Tribune today. Saying that outbreaks of coronavirus have struck mink farms in Wisconsin and Michigan, but Illinois has been spared so far. A spokesman said that as of mid-November, two farms in Wisconsin, which is the nation's largest mink-producing state by far, have detected coronavirus in their animals, as have a dozen in Utah and one in Michigan. So it has happened here.
Wow. Well, I don't have anything to do with minks or foxes or sables or whatever else they got that they make fur out of. So I'm okay. But, yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, people wanting to buy mink coats, I mean, is it... I know a lot of the furriers that are out there that, you know, people used to store their minks for, like, the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
the ads on the radio all the
time.
That was a big deal.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how big a business that is. Apparently, if they've got all these farms over there and all of these minks, apparently it is a big business.
Yeah. It's funny that really has become a much smaller aspect. And I think mostly, right, because of the blowback from animal rights groups, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
The state's mink industry tends to make news only when activists break in and release animals. The last episode appears to have happened in 2013 when two men from Los Angeles freed 2,000 mink from a farm in Morris, Illinois.
There you go.
That must have been a mess.
Sure. 2,000? Can you imagine all of them running down the street in Morris?
In Morris, Illinois.
In Morris?
Overtaking
Morris,
Illinois.
It's a nice town.
Basically.
I've been in Morris. It's a very nice town. But can you imagine 2,000 of them running down Main Street?
No, I cannot. There's a commercial on TV right now. I don't know what it is, but there's a kid running with a package and all sorts of cats running after him or something. I envision that.
Did you see the turkeys? The turkey video? I don't know where it was because I was just entranced by the video. It must have been, I'll overestimate, 75 full-grown turkeys just waddling down a street.
This is not a major. Like past cars and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Past cars and over a bridge.
And like through and down a parking lot or something.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Raj, I got to tell you. So that was on social media being passed around. And as you're scrolling through, you sort of half look at things until something catches your eye. So I see that. And my biggest fear was this is like some weird slaughterhouse thing. And
no.
They're all, because they kept making a noise, like, right? Somebody, whoever's videotaping would go,
I didn't have the audio.
And
I didn't have the audio.
And then they'd all do it. Oh, that was,
yeah.
You got to see that because the person who's taping it, as they're all going by, they'd just be walking and then he'd go, and you'd hear like 100 of them go, back.
Right.
And I thought, oh, God, is this how he's leading them? Is this how we're getting our turkey this year? I don't want to see this. It's terrible.
Actually, we used to go up to a farm in Wisconsin right before Halloween every year, and they have all the animals out in cages, and you can do that to the turkeys. We used to stand outside. Well, we being me.
You'd stand
would
and
stand
talk
out.
Turkeys?
I would do the turkey noise, and if you didn't do it, you could whistle, too. But if it wasn't at the right frequency, they wouldn't say anything back. But if you hit that right frequency, they'd all go crazy.
Maybe that's what the guy's doing on the video. Maybe he's whistling. Maybe he's not doing it.
Yeah.
I was up in Galena recently with some friends, and we were golfing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were wild turkeys on the course.
Oh.
I'd never seen wild turkeys in person before. But I know that wild turkeys are one of the big reasons that the tick population is booming in North America.
Interesting.
Wild turkeys and deer spreading all the ticks around.
Yeah, well, I knew about the deer, but turkey, interesting.
I never, I've heard people talk about my buddy Johnny in Northwest Indiana used to go and hunt turkeys. And it always just seems so silly to me. I'm like, there's turkeys running around?
Yeah.
And so I was trying to videotape these turkeys, and I was scared the whole time they were going to attack me.
Jeez.
They didn't. I got away.
I was attacked by a turkey once. It was I was a lot younger. I was married, and we went to another different farm. And those little candy machines, you put a penny in and turn it, and you get like peanuts or feed or whatever. And I went over to start doing this. Wild turkey came over and started attacking me as I'm trying to get the coin in and get the feed out. And kept coming
hungry.
It wanted food. It was after me.
You were taking too long.
Huh?
You were taking too long.
I thought I was moving pretty fast when he started coming at me.
Did the turkey get up then, push the penny the rest of the way in and start turning the thing?
I can't remember. I was kind of turned the other way. I was heading in the right direction.
You got to be careful. You don't turn the other way when there's a turkey coming after you, Roger. All right, we'll talk about online gambling after we get a check of the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You heard the tone. Let's do that. 909-720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 10 o'clock. Gambling here in the state of Illinois has taken on a lot of new, new importance as we've ridden this pandemic-riddled year and the loss of revenues in many other areas. But Illinois casinos are doing pretty well because of the online gambling that's available now, or maybe a lot of other companies are doing pretty well. So let's get a handle on what it all means. Steve Bittenbender is a senior writer for Casino.org. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing fine, Matt. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. We appreciate it. Tell me real quick what Casino.org is.
Casino.org, we're a news site. Our news site's web address is casino.org/news. And we cover all facets of the gaming industry here in the United States. So myself, I'm based in Louisville, Kentucky, so I cover a lot of Midwest gaming, Indiana, and of course Illinois being a big part of that. But we also cover a lot of what's happening in Las Vegas, Atlantic City, and elsewhere. If it's related to gaming, we look to cover it and let people know what's going on.
So let's talk a little bit about sports, because that has become a huge thing in the last year and a half, ever since the Supreme Court ruling, which was that over a year ago now?
Two and a half years ago.
Is it that long? Wow.
Supreme Court overturned PASPA May of 2018. New Jersey and Delaware started sports betting shortly thereafter, and it's just taken off ever since. I think it's roughly about half the country now has access to legal sports gaming in the United States, and it's only going to get bigger. There's more states that are adding this game for residents in their states. Louisiana, Maryland are two of the states getting ready to do it. Virginia as well. So So it's grown by leaps and bounds and probably will continue to do so for the next 2 to 3 years.
You'd have to imagine so. I mean, so many people were gambling in one form or another as it was. And now by making it available, there's states that can reap tax benefits from it. Here in Illinois, you were required to be in person to register to have an account, but they've waived that rule for the time being this year and recently extended that because, I believe, of the pandemic and giving people opportunities to do things without having to be in person. How big of a revenue boost has this been for states that are allowing this type of gambling to happen?
Well, it's definitely picked up a lot of traffic in states. In Illinois, as you mentioned, there was initially the requirement that if you wanted a mobile sports betting account, you'd have to go to the particular casino first. Didn't even have to go in the actual casino. You could have just driven into the parking lot and uploaded the app and registered that way. But you had to physically go. Obviously, with the pandemic, that's changed things. Governor Pritzker there issued a waiver to that. He first did it in June. After casinos reopened, he relented on that and put the waiver back in place. But then as casinos started to see, started to get reduction in hours orders because of the COVID pandemic, he reinstated it. And obviously he just within the last week or so closed casinos again. So it just puts, more of an emphasis on, being able to have that waiver in place, which he extended 2 weeks ago through mid-December. So that means anyone who wants to pick up a sports betting account, whether it's DraftKings, FanDuel, PointsBet, BetRivers, any of those that are in Illinois right now, all you have to do is just download the app to your phone, your mobile device, and you'll be able to start betting right away. And with that, it's really, as I said, that having that waiver in place really helped Illinois the last couple of months in September. Illinois sports bettors wagered over $305 million on, pro basketball, pro football, pro baseball. It's a significant amount of money. It was the fourth highest total of any state in the country behind Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Nevada. So there was immediate interest right there once mobile gaming became fully available statewide.
And that more than doubled their August numbers. I'm guessing a lot of that is the NFL finally started, and that's where a lot of that betting comes in?
A lot of that was. Of course, you also had, with the pandemic, you did have hockey and pro basketball go into September, and for basketball, early October, too. So that played a little bit of it, but in sports betting, football is king. So so a lot of that was, the first couple of weeks of the NFL, obviously a lot of Bears fans in Illinois, and you probably had a few Packer fans and some football fans from Missouri across the Mississippi River and get some action in as well.
Now, can people from other states bet through these Illinois houses or only in their own states?
They can. Anyone can set up an account, but you have to physically be in Illinois when you make the bet. So these apps have geofencing programs built in. So let's say someone from up in the northern suburbs. Let's say they're going up to Milwaukee to visit someone. They could, even though they're an Illinois resident, they wouldn't be able to bet from Milwaukee. They would physically have to be in the state. And a non-resident, someone from Wisconsin, someone from Missouri, someone from out of state can come into Illinois as long as they're physically in Illinois and place a bet through these apps.
So they don't have to actually go to the casino, just cross the state border so your phone recognizes where you are, and then you can place that bet. You know, I've been wondering if the old friend who was the guy down the street who took numbers for you and like took the bets, if that guy is being put out of business, maybe he's just in business now talking to the people that live too far away and placing the bets for them. Is the money guy, the guy that used to take the bets, your dealer, your guy, what is it called? Who's the guy that takes the bets? What do they always call
it?
Your bookie. Sorry. Bookie. Thank you.
Yep.
I've been away. Is the bookie going to become a modern technology guy who's just booking from further away?
He's actually most bookies have already been doing that for a while. And while the state, while states like Illinois, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and across the country will be looking to get more people to regulated sports books, there's still, the American Gaming Association still notes that there's a lot of people who still bet with illegal bookies or through these offshore, unregulated, gray markets sports books that are in Central America or in the Caribbean. So there's going to be a period of time where you're going to see people, still bet with what they're familiar with. Even if it is illegal or if it's an unregulated book, they're going to still continue doing that. But the hope is eventually they will move on to the FanDuels, the William Hills, the Points Bets, and the Bet Rivers, and start wagering with a regulated sports book.
We're speaking with Scott Bittenbender. He is a senior writer for Casino.org. Do you have a question about gambling or other questions about how to jump into this? 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. 922 on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Steve Bittenbender. He is a senior writer for Casino.org. Steve, let's talk a little bit about making the bets and how we sign up for these things. We work here at WGN Radio with DraftKings. You've mentioned there's various places all over the place. When we make general bets, you said football is king. One of the most fun things every year is when the Super Bowl comes around, there's a million prop bets. I imagine now that all these places are kind of looking to the casual bettor, the person who didn't already have a bookie, and that's got to be where a lot of this revenue is coming from for the states, I would think. I would imagine they're looking for more fun ways to get people interested in betting. Are there a lot more different bets being offered now than generally were in the past?
Well, yes. Short answer to that is yes. And if you go on any of the apps, DraftKings in particular, you'll see not only can you bet on the point spread, which is pretty much the most common way most people bet on games. You can also bet straight up. You'll see, far different odds. Obviously, if a team that's, it's a 7-point favorite on the point spread, you're not going to get even money odds for them to be straight up. You're going to have to put up more money to try to win a little more. Or if it's the underdog, you will get better odds that way. You'll also have what's called the total or the over-under total points scored in the game. But then if you click on the game, you'll be able to go in and, they offer alternative lines. Let's say, an upcoming game, Chicago is a 7-point favorite. They'll have, sometimes they will have odds that will say, okay, for slightly lower odds or slightly worse odds, you only have to give 6 points or 5.5. So they have things like that in there. They also have what's called player proposition bets. So if if Trubisky, for example, there's going to be a prop bet on him. Will he throw for 250 yards or not? They would have odds on that. They'd have odds on receivers and running backs, who would score the first touchdown of the game. There's a plethora of opportunities there that allow people to bet on whatever. And then in addition, you can also bet during the game. So, let's say the game's a dud, the Bears are down by 3 scores, you know, late in the third quarter. You know, you can go on these apps, and they will have odds and spreads that correlate to where the game is now. So if you think the Bears may make a late comeback, you might be willing to take them and the points, and, you know, stick around and watch the conclusion of that game rather than turn it off and go do something else. So, and that's where a lot of these sports books are hoping to really entice their customers and get them to really embrace this in-game betting and even sports leagues. Now, sports leagues used to be against sports betting. I grew up a Cincinnati Reds fan. I remember the Pete Rose scandal as clear as if it was yesterday. And even up to the PASPA lawsuit, where they were totally against Supreme Court rules in New Jersey's favor, and then all of a sudden the professional sports leagues see the light and see the dollar signs, really, that are tied with sports betting. And they see this now as a way to interact and engage with fans and keep them engaged in games, you know, from start to finish.
Well, that is a really interesting aspect of it. You mentioning that, like, you know, that game tomorrow night might be a real stinker, and by the fourth quarter, we might want to go to bed. But if we could say, hey, I bet the Bears, you know, score in garbage time, let's bet on that. That keeps us watching. That's great for the networks. That's great for the teams. That's great for a lot of people, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's why you see these partnerships forming up. As you mentioned, WGN with DraftKings. PointsBet has a relationship with NBC Sports, and that ties in with the NBC Regional Sports Network there in Illinois. So, you know, you're seeing more and more of these partnerships develop across the country. And, you know, it's all about engagement. It's all about keeping fans watching, and at some point keeping fans betting on these games as well.
I got to ask you real quick. We only have a minute left, but tomorrow night there is a fight. Mike Tyson is fighting Roy Jones Jr. tomorrow night. Now it's supposed to be an exhibition, but it is a pay-per-view. It's real money. I saw that it's drawing records for how many pay-per-views it's selling. I don't know if that's true or not, but Mike Tyson, we've seen a lot of leaked video. He looks really good. Is this something that people can bet on, and is it seeing a lot of action?
I have seen some places with odds on this. There's been some question, though, as far as whether or not this is actually going to be a for-real fight or an exhibition fight. Because there was talk about how, oh, there's not going to be any knockdowns.
Right.
If one of the two fighters gets cut, it's over.
Right.
So there's some uncertainty about it, but from what I've seen, you know, there has been some interest in it, and you know, I think Tyson right now is the favorite in this. But you know, with these fights, you know, who knows? And you know, especially with this being somewhat of an exhibition, you know, it could very easily be that, you know, it's just, you know, two old greats, you know, sparring around in the ring, and you know, maybe trying to hit each other hard, but you know, not trying to do too much damage. So you know, it'll be interesting. So, you know, not everyone has odds on the fight, but a few of the sports books do. And you know, I, as you said, it's generating a lot of interest from the pay-per-view world as well.
Yeah. What do you think, if Tyson makes a good showing tomorrow night, will there be a real fight, a real payday in his future?
I mean, you never say never with fighters, but, you know, Tyson is on the north side of 50, and as great as he was in his heyday, and really he probably was one of the best heavyweights of all time, I really don't see how he could stand up with someone like a Tyson Fury or an Anthony Joshua. I don't see where he could really hang with one of the heavyweight champions that's fighting now. I would rule against it, but as I just as I said, who knows in boxing? So
they do need.
We may see the next George Foreman type comeback.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, hey, Foreman looked good for a couple of years, and he was older then. Steve Bittenbender, senior writer for Casino.org. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us, Steve.
Thanks, Matt. You have a good holiday.
All right, good luck to you, sir. It's time for some News Nation news here on 720 WGN. Mitch Trubisky is going to ride the boogie this weekend as he is back in the starting slide for our Chicago Bears against the Green Bay Packers. Our host of Three Bears coverage here on WGN Radio is our own Mark Carman. Hey, Carm, how are you, bud?
Matt, do you think that Mitchell Trubisky right now is just dancing at home to that tune, getting another opportunity to take on the Green Bay Packers? Because that's what I'm hoping he's doing, because he should be doing a little jig here. Let's go, Mitchell.
I don't know.
Opportunity number two.
I don't know if he's doing a jig. I mean, he's got to be thinking. I mean, there's on the one hand, you could be like, all right, sweet, I get another chance. On the other hand, you could be sitting there going, if I screw this up, I will never get another opportunity.
Yeah, but he's got nothing to lose. I mean, some people were saying that maybe he doesn't want to play, or maybe behind this offensive line that it's best for him with the bad shoulder to not play. It's like, look, he has no value going into his free agency right now. If he plays well in these last six games, I mean, that could change. I'm not saying he's going to, but if I'm him, I'm thinking I got nothing to lose here.
Well, you're right. And, Carm, I know that when Nick Foles got brought in, pretty much everybody had turned against Trubisky. It had looked bad, hadn't been accurate, all those things. Then Nick Foles wins a couple of games, does well in relief, all those things, and things seem to be good. And then everything goes sour with him. And the funny thing is, as much as we wanted, in general, Mitch out when Mitch wasn't playing that well, you watch Nick Foles during these last few games where the offensive line can't really stop anybody, and Nick Foles doesn't really have mobility back there, and you're thinking, God, if Trubisky was in the game, at least he would run for some yardage here. And it's kind of a catch-22. Once one's in, you start pining for the other. But do you think, from what you saw these last few games, did you ever think at all, you know what, Mitch maybe would be more successful the way things are looking right now?
It's amazing that I've had that thought and that many people are having that thought. Well, Nick Foles can't move. The Bears have one of the worst offensive lines in the entire NFL. And, you know, you have this opinion on a player, and then you actually get to see the player when he comes to play for your team, and you see him week in and week out. You don't just see him in the Super Bowl for the Eagles beating Tom Brady, and you see Nick Foles with this Bears team, and it was just very, very evident that this is not going to work. So I think Nick maybe could be a good quarterback here if all the pieces were in place, particularly if they had a left tackle, a right tackle, and a couple of guards and a center. That would probably help, but they don't. So, and maybe Trubisky can make it look a little bit better. That's not the position you want to be in if you're the Bears. This is unbelievable that we're having this. Go back to Trubisky. Nobody saw that coming, but that's where we are, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
So Trubisky is definitely starting tomorrow night. It says in the latest Tribune article I saw that Foles was classified as doubtful, but he will be on the bench in a backup role if he is okay to play. So what are you seeing for tomorrow night? The Packers seem to run a little hot and cold. They've looked unbeatable, and they've looked pretty human at times. What team do you think we face up in it's up in Lambeau tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, well, you're jumping it. I think we're getting confused in the Thanksgiving weekend. It's Sunday
right.
night.
So. You're right. Right. We're not going to play that one on Saturday night. We still got a little time. You're right. Sunday night. Yeah. I apologize.
So look, Green Bay still has Aaron Rodgers. They are, you know, it's interesting. If you go back to when the Bears played the Colts, the Bears couldn't score. In Green Bay put up 30 plus on him. Now lost the football game though. I mean, so that Packers defense is not exactly all world up there. So, yeah, but to have any confidence that the Bears are actually going to put their offense together and score points, I'm skeptical. And what people aren't talking about right now is, I mean, Akeem Hicks has got a hamstring injury. I doubt he's playing. He hasn't been practicing. And if he is playing, I don't think I missed any news today. But he's not going to be the Akeem Hicks. So a key, you know, top guy on your defense, if not your best defensive player, arguably, Ed Obradovich would tell you that Akeem Hicks is that guy. That's a huge problem because you know, you're not, I don't think the Bears are winning a shootout against Green Bay. I think it's going to look real ugly on Sunday night, man. Honestly, I think it's going to be a tall task for the Bears to stay in the football game.
We don't talk about also the fact that the Bears really have no running backs right now, right? That can't be helping either.
No, can't run the ball. I mean, I do like David Montgomery. I think I don't think he's an elite running back, but I think he's a capable running back.
Is he back for this game?
Yeah, Montgomery will play. Okay. But I just, if you had Walter Payton back there in his prime, I don't want to take anything away from Sweetness, but he wouldn't be having his best all-time year, running behind these guys.
Yeah.
It's just, everybody tells you went up front in football, and everybody agrees. And then you see it play out when you don't have it, and it's like, oh, if you can't block anyone, you can't do anything. I mean, you just can't. And I mean, you're a longtime football guy. This is not news to Matt Bubala, damn it. But that's just where the Bears are at. It's just kind of amazing to me that the Bears knew going into the offseason last year that they had trouble up front, and all they did was change some coaches and draft seventh-round guys who aren't playing. So just they didn't address it, and it's coming back to kill them.
Did they think that guys were going to improve this year, that the line was going to get better, that it was injuries or other things in the past?
I guess. I mean, listen, they've lost James Daniels, who that was a huge loss to the pec injury early in the season. So they have been banged up there. But, I mean, they went out and they fired Harry Hiestand, who's incredibly well-respected as an offensive line coach. I know people love offensive line talk. But,
totally.
I mean, just think about this. This guy was really, really well-respected in the game, but he's kind of a prickly dude. That's his resume. That's what people say about him, right? And so maybe he wasn't best friends with Matt Nagy, who likes to – and I like Matt Nagy. He's a fine fellow. But it just seems to me that he's a little too invested, at least at times, in everybody liking him versus everybody respecting him. And for whatever reason, they just decided to move on from the coaches and bring in Juan Castillo, who was, been bonged out of two offensive line jobs. Now all coaches change all the time, but it was not an upgrade, and they didn't upgrade the talent either. So, I mean, this is just a bad formula.
What do you think of Nagy giving up play calling last week?
I mean, I thought he had to do it, right? I mean, look, let's see what it looks like with Bill Lazor. As far as I'm concerned, let's just keep switching around here. Let's give John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, a chance here. Let's give Dave Ragone, the offensive quality coach,
we're going to make it a college of offensive play callers. Is that what we're going to do?
Right. I mean, what didn't the Cubs have the college of coaches like in the 60s or something, right? I don't know. Bill Lazor called plays for the Bengals for 2 years. He called plays for the Dolphins for 2 years. The best record that he was ever on was, 8-8. He's rolling with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's rolling with Andy Dalton. Like, how much – it's hard to really know, is he qualified? Is he not qualified? I don't know. It didn't look better last week, though. But I did think that, to answer your question, I thought it was absolutely – Matt, it's been proven. You're not an offensive guru. Take a step back and just oversee the whole operation and be the rah-rah guy. To me, that's his role. That's where he is probably best.
Okay, but wasn't Matt Nagy brought here because he was an offensive guru?
Yeah, that would be a problem, Matt. That'd be a problem. Right?
And in his first year, he looked like a genius. We're running crazy plays. We're doing all these things, and it's working. And it seems like he just kind of went away from that. And I don't know if he thought, well, I don't have the talent for that. I can't do it. But now the genius play seems to be step back, throw it straight across to the guy 20 yards that way, and then he'll go a yard maybe. And, we never have anything more creative than that, it seems like. We're not – I don't know. It just seems that they've kind of given up on the offense. And I wonder if Nagy giving up play calling – Is it really a way for the Bears to be better? Is it a way for, at the end of the year, him to go to Ryan Pace and say, hey, look it, no matter who's calling the plays, we don't have the talent right now. Well, we got to take a quick break. Mark Carmen is here with us talking Bears Packers this Sunday night. We'll talk more about that next here on 720 WGN. WGN Radio Sports. Mark Carmen is on the phone with us. He hosts Three Bears coverage here on WGN Radio every week. Three Bears will be on this coming Tuesday night, Mark.
Hampton OB brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago.com. 7 to 10 Tuesday nights, baby. Let's go.
Excellent. How does OB feel about Trubisky being back in the chair?
Oh, my God. I haven't talked to OB this Thanksgiving weekend, which now I'm starting to feel bad about that.
I thought you were going to say you're thankful for that.
I'm not thankful for that. I miss my OB.
Oh, please. You're scared of OB. I guarantee it.
But he's a teddy bear. Let's be honest. OB's the sweetest, except when he's angry, which is when he becomes terrifying.
Except when there's a Bears game, which is when you have to talk to him.
Right. But listen, Hamp wanted Foles to continue starting, so he can't be thrilled about it. And look, OB has been the furthest thing from a Mitchell Trubisky fan that there is. So yeah. I don't think either of those guys are, pumping their fists saying, yes, Trubisky's back. We've got the Packers.
If Foles doesn't leave the last game on a stretcher, is he starting on Sunday night?
It's a really interesting question because, when Nagy was asked about it this week and he wouldn't answer it. And it was so irritating. Like, well, what we've got right now is that, we just don't know if Nick's going to be able to go. If he's not going to be able to go, then we'll be going with Mitch. And then he's pressed on it. Well, what happens if they're both healthy? Well, we're not there yet because Nick isn't healthy. So I don't know what he's telling them. But to the media, he's just making it out like I'm not answering that question because I don't have to answer that question because Nick Foles is not ready to play. And to me, like if you're a head coach, part of your job description is being able to give direct answers. And I know the NFL is all about secrecy and you don't want to give anything away. But let's be real: is there such a huge advantage for the Green Bay Packers to not have known on Wednesday like who's starting this? Yeah. I mean, come on. So and they know now. So you got to announce these things. So but we don't know exactly what it would have been. My assumption is that he would have stuck with Nick. That's what I think he would have done.
If at the end of the year, I was mentioning as we went into the break, we go to the end of the year and he's got other people calling plays. Does Nagy is that give Nagy a little bit of cover to say, listen, nobody can call plays for this group. We need better talent, or is it all reflecting badly on Matt Nagy?
See, I give him credit, like to not put yourself in front of the team and, I'm not going to white knuckle this no matter what the evidence is showing me right now. I'm calling the plays, damn it. Like, I think he would have looked poor if that's how he would have gone about it. But instead, he's saying, whatever's best for the team, let's do that. I'm the head coach. You guys, clearly I'm not getting it done, so I'm going to give these guys a chance. If I was Ryan Pace, I'd see that as a positive. A lot of people think like that both Pace and or Nagy are really both are going to be out if the Bears, fall short of the playoffs. And I'm highly skeptical that's going to happen. Like, if they've lost four in a row, they were 5-1, they're 5-5. If they lose out, which is highly unlikely considering they've got, games like Detroit on the schedule and, Jacksonville, there's winnable games there. But outside of doing that, like if this team finishes 7-9, I don't think there's going to be a change with the head coach and or the GM. I think they get one more year.
Yeah, I'd be surprised as well. The Bears aren't quick to pull the trigger on things like that. What do you make of what they're doing in New Orleans with Taysom Hill when Drew Brees is healthy, working them both in there? If Foles was healthy and able to play and Trubisky, he left with an injury, a shoulder injury. He got in one play in a game a few weeks ago and then injured his shoulder. Do you see the Bears as trying to say, hey, we don't have much in the running back field right now. Let's work both of these guys in. I mean, clearly Foles is going to be the one throwing the ball because he's not going to run, but Mitch does have some skills running the ball. Do you see if they go back to Foles a way that Mitch also gets worked in?
See, I didn't mind it when they did. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Because Mitch is very skilled running the football. And look, I'm completely fine with Trubisky acting like he's going to run. Now he's throwing the ball downfield, and all of a sudden the Bears offense has a different weapon that they haven't had. That to me was – it made sense. But unfortunately, the one play they did it, he ends up hurting his shoulder, and he's not active for 2 weeks after it, weeks 9 and 10. So, but I don't think they'll go back and forth. Listen, they're having a hard time gaming up one game plan for a quarterback to actually go to two. I don't see him doing it. I think that, look, if Trubisky's either going to play well on Sunday or he's not, and after that, if he plays well, I think they'll stay with him. If he doesn't, they'll go back to Nick, would be my guess. But also, at some point, I think you start looking towards the future. Maybe they've already made their mind up on Mitch, but if I'm the Bears, I'd rather see him play out the final five weeks of the season and see if you can just squeeze anything out of the lemon one more time before officially saying goodbye and letting him walk as a free agent.
So what does Mitch have to do well for the Bears to have a shot on Sunday night? Is there anything he can truly control? The defense should put them in a position to have the possibility of winning, right? So what does Mitch have to do?
I mean, I think he's got to pick up a lot of first downs with his legs, Matt. Like, look, extend drives. He probably needs to rush for well over 50 yards. Put that wrinkle into the Bears offense that they haven't had. That would be one for sure. And look, he's always had a great bond with Allen Robinson. Robinson's been very frustrated the last couple of weeks, has not seen the ball as much from Nick. So let's get that pairing going back. And look, he's got, there's weapons here. Darnell Mooney's been a great rookie. Foles has missed him on some incredible routes that he's run by 5 freaking yards. I mean, it's just like, dude, come on, man. This kid is making, like, he's doing double moves. He's shaking cornerbacks. He's wide open for touchdowns, and you're not hitting him. That would be something. If Mitch can build that bond going on and show that he's got a greater hold of the offense, right? I mean, he's, I listened to his press conference today, and he talked about going up against the Bears defense and trying different things, that he's learned a lot the last couple of weeks. So hopefully that'll be the case, and we'll see something a little bit different Sunday night.
Do you see a scenario where the Packers hold back on the rush a little bit to make Mitch stay back in the pocket and throw? Because that's really been where Mitch has struggled the most, isn't it? Accuracy and decision-making on who to throw to?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, will they just try to disguise defenses and, try to pick them off multiple times? I mean, they could do that. But I don't know. It's a tough thing to do. Like, I think ultimately any defense, you try to get to the quarterback. I don't think they'll change up their game plan that much and just try to do something cute to try to stop him. They'll just go after him like they normally do and try to create as much havoc as possible. And look, if he has no time to throw, they're not going to be successful. So, I mean, I'm hearing OB in my head right now. It's to sprint out, move the pocket. I mean, yes, you can do all that, but it's a lot easier said than done for it to actually work.
Bears at Packers, Sunday night football at Lambeau Field. Real quick, Carm, so that means Saturday night we have a free night to do whatever we want. There's a Mike Tyson fight. Are you springing the 40? I'm buying it. $49.99. Heck yeah, my sons are all excited. I want to see a 53-year-old Mike Tyson fight Roy Jones Jr. I want to see it.
I saw my buddy Russell Dorsey from the Sun-Times.
Yeah.
He's covering MLB. He's covering the Cubs now. And he's like, am I in for watching a 50-year-old fight Roy Jones Jr. and paying $50 for it? Yes, I am. It's got like 1,000 likes. Like,
totally.
The people are in on this. And apparently Mabu Fambala's in too.
This is great pandemic programming, for goodness sakes. When's the last time you got really excited about a heavyweight fight? Never in your recent lifetime is the answer. And it's Mike Tyson. And you've seen the leaked video. I don't know if it's doctored or not, but he looks like a stud. I'm excited to see when we were younger, George Foreman had a bunch of really successful late in life years, and he looked gooey at the time and still was fun to watch. Tyson looks like he's the old Mike Tyson right now.
When you listen to him talk about getting back in the ring, it's pretty terrifying. He'll say stuff like, I don't want to wake that part of me back up, because he knows that rage is still well alive in there somewhere. So, it's not going to look like he's going to be old Iron Mike here, but it'll be entertaining. I get it. I'm curious to watch it too. I hope
you know, I don't, it's,
you got to think, you got to think that Mike's bank account has been severely depleted over the years. And if you're a fighter and you're Tyson and you can, somebody say to you, all right, dude, get in insane shape and then you can make $50 million. Of course you're going to do it, right?
I would think, yes, assuming that you haven't saved your money to the level that you would like.
I'm going to assume Mike wasn't talking to E.F. Hutton all the time and like making the sound choices we'd like to make. All right, Carm, it's great talking to you, buddy. Have a great weekend. We'll hear you on Tuesday night.
Thanks, Matt. See you, brother.
All right, Mark Carmen from WGN Radio Sports. I'm Matt Bubala. Thanks so much for listening. John Records Landecker is back Monday night at 7. Coming up next, Phil Minicky is in for Dave Plyer here on Radio 720 WGN.